now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We're back. Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. Yeah, bet you didn't think we would wangle our way back into your podcast. But yes, we're back. I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I know that you've all missed us over the summer because, let's face it, there wasn't too much else going on. Let me introduce my guests. It's the excellent Julian Lawrence. It's James Scowcroft, who, I will never tire of saying this, is one of the few multimillionaire retired Premier League footballers who actually pays for his season tickets to go watch the club he supports. And finally, it's a poignant note because I don't know if I'm allowed to say this or if it's supposed to be a secret, but Rory K. Smith is leaving The Times, but don't worry, he'll be joining The Times. More of this later, or you can go Google him. Anyway, first podcast of the season, we'll be talking Premier League predictions, we'll be talking a little bit of Sam Allardyce, the new England manager, and we'll be reviewing the weekend's action, starting with the Goal Fest at the Emirates. Arsenal and Liverpool, Rory, let's start with you because we love making sweeping statements and generalizations on the back of 90 minutes. And Arsenal lose at home at Liverpool, which means that then Wenger gets criticized afterwards and it's all rubbish and it's the usual thing. Why don't you spend the money? Blah, blah, blah. But for the first 44 minutes, Arsenal were actually pretty good. And this was a very understrength Arsenal side, of course. No Ozil, no Giroud, no center backs. Maybe a soft foul, an amazing free kick, and then the wheels all come off in the second half.
Maybe in the coverage today, that's maybe not been highlighted enough, that it was a really underpowered Arsenal team. You can't get away from it.
But they played well, not just underpowered, but they played well in the first half.
They were Liverpool just pants in the first half. It is the nature of football that if you play well in the first half, then crumble in the second, that people will focus on the crumbling rather than the playing well. But I think especially with the central defenders of Rob Holding and Callum Chambers, there has to be a degree, not necessarily of leeway, but of allowance for the fact that Liverpool had sort of, 20 minutes where they were fantastic going forwards. Yeah, two inexperienced centre-backs. For me, Chambers isn't really a centre-back, but you know, two players who weren't kind of seasoned campaigners in those positions, it's understandable they struggled a little bit. But I think the problem is, and the reason that the criticism is justified to some extent, Wenger's known for a while that Pernatovic is going to be injured, so he knows he needs a senior central defender, and he hasn't got it done. And B, it's this continual sense that Arsenal are always going into the season, always going through the season, kind of at risk of losing one or two players to injury, and then not really having the quality in reserve because of Wenger's apparent refusal, reluctance, whatever it is, to kind of dirty himself in the transfer market. I think that's the reason that there were the boos at the Emirates. That's the reason why there's been so much kind of negative response to what was, to be honest, just one of those kind of slightly chaotic, crazy games you get occasionally.
It kind of really was, because I looked at the second half, and we'll get back to Wenger in a second. But Julian, I can ask both of you, since both of you are very fine footballers. Without getting into expected goals and all this nuttiness that people don't talk about, but Liverpool's goals, three of the four, were really, really good finishes, really, really good technical finishes, and aside Mane run, and you can say, oh, the defenders are idiots because they didn't hack them down. But, I mean, should there be an allowance for that, you know, maybe this performance in the second half, apart from those 20 minutes, wasn't quite so awful before we go and crucify Wenger in the transfer market?
I agree, and I even thought Chambers and Holding didn't even do too bad in that second half. I just thought that especially the Lallana's goal, a lot of teams would have considered that goal, even with two very experienced centre-halves, two international players as centre-halves. I just thought Liverpool were, for those 20, 25 minutes, just so good that they would have scored against anyone. Not just, you know, it was Arsenal, but it could have been anyone else. I think they would have scored. However, maybe Arsenal shouldn't start the season with Rob Holding and Callum Chambers as centre-halves anyway, whoever they were facing.
that goes back there. Can I just have another word on the goals from you, as a connoisseur, a guy who scored a few goals? Of Liverpool's goals, which one was most difficult to execute? I mean, can you plan for that as a defender?
Well, you can't really plan for the free kick, can you? The free kick is, well, you not give the free kick away in the first place. I think there's Coutinho's goal for me. You know, Mane's is, you know, very, very impressive. But I think defensively, when he goes down that right-hand side, you don't let him come inside. You box him in there. Look at all the goals in that little spell, and you can say, well, there's not a lot Arsenal could have done. Well, they could have done, because they could have been tacking up the other end.
Right.
And they could have been keeping the ball, and they could have been stifling Liverpool of possession, so they can't score the goals. So I don't really buy into this. Liverpool were just good for 20 minutes. I think you create your own problems, really. But they were, the goals were of a very high standard.
Gab, which one of the four are you saying wasn't a good technical finish? The one that Coutinho shinned?
Did he shin it?
Shinned it, yeah.
Completely, yeah. But yeah, he's there, and there's 19 passes before.
Yeah.
So it's a great team goal, but it's a lucky finish.
It was, and yeah, and you could say the Lallana one as well. They did kind of lose him.
But the movement on the Lallana one, it was a great ball.
But the movement was tremendous. I mean, yeah, this is high quality stuff that we're seeing. I mean, people who wonder, like, what's the big deal with Klopp? Well, this is the big deal. Like, they, you know, good players, they do this, and it's great to watch. Now, on the flip side, and we'll get back to Wenger in a bit, I just want to talk about Liverpool and Alberto Moreno, because he got absolutely skewered on social media and on television. I don't want to be Mr. Contrarian here, and I'm not suggesting he's a tremendous defender, but he mistimes a tackle for the penalty, which can happen, but he also wasn't that far off the ball, was he?
No, he's out of position on the World Cup goal, though.
At that level,
you just can't make
a mistake. I want to ask about that. He's out of position on that, but he's out of position because he's attacking and getting forward, and because somebody else loses the ball, right?
Yeah.
Isn't there some kind of, you know, your left back goes, presumably not because he's an idiot, but because the manager wants him to go,
exactly.
And then you make an adjustment and somebody else slides and covers for him. I mean, is it...
He's a bit victim of the philosophy that Klopp wants, i.e. you get the ball back and then you bomb forward, basically, when you do, and hence, if you lose it quickly, then you were on your way up forwards, and then you have to go backwards, and you have position on the... That's exactly what happened on World Cup. However...
Was it Lallana who gave the ball away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great tackle by Coquelin, by the way, but still, Moreno doesn't expect Lallana to lose the ball so quickly and so early, and so he's on his way. However, if you're a bit clever, there's times where you can go forward quickly, and you bomb forward, even if that's what the manager asks you, and there's times where you think, hang on a minute, you know, the ball is still in a dangerous area, so maybe I'm not going to go right now, I'm just going to wait a bit, see if Lallana keeps the ball, and then I can go. I mean, it's not new. Moreno, even last season, Moreno was...
going to be Liverpool's Achilles heel, looking at it, isn't it? The defensive side to their game.
Klein doesn't seem to suffer of that philosophy.
Jules, that's the key point. I'm with you. I'm not a big person for saying... He gave away a penalty. He was out of position, you know. So he's terrible. Write him off. Get a new left back. It's there's too much of that sort of knee-jerk exaggeration. But the problem with Moreno is that, and to be honest, I'm not 100% convinced it was a penalty. I thought he got the ball first. But the problem.
Yeah,
with
but
Moreno,
don't they foul that under the? I mean, maybe he did get a touch, but it's rash and blah blah blah.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. But that's then getting into kind of. Referees seem to, or the boards who decide the way that referees have to interpret the rules seem to insist on making things exceptionally complicated for everybody. But the problem is that he does only make, you know, he only makes one or two mistakes a game, but he makes one or two mistakes every single game. It keeps happening, and that's when you know you need to upgrade. But Klopp's obviously looked at left backs, so they were interested in Jonas Hector at Cologne and
Guerrero as well.
He doesn't think he can get one who is a substantial upgrade on Moreno, because, you know, maybe there's not that many out there who he can afford, who he can get to Liverpool, who he wants to work with, and who will do what Moreno does significantly better that would justify the outlay.
Before we get to Wenger and his centre-backs, I want to throw one other thing out there, which Wenger talked about. After the game, he sort of complained that, you know, there wasn't enough time after the Euros, blah, blah, blah. And I kind of felt that way, seeing, obviously, Mesut Ozil, Giroud out, Sturridge out, because I guess he's tired again, or they think he might get injured again, blah, blah, blah. And it did strike me, like, why does the season need to start now? I mean, when you look at Germany, which is another league, the Bundesliga also starts early. Obviously, they got that, you know, they have fewer teams and they have that gigantic break in the middle. But normally, Bundesliga and the Premier League generally start the same weekend, roughly, right? I don't know. Wouldn't you want to do it so that you can actually see the best players out there? And I'm assuming Giroud's problem is that because he's a big man,
because he played until the end of the Euros, he's doing his preseason training and the workloads and all this jazz. Scott, you've been there. Is this that big a deal?
It is. I can see your summer break is a very important time of the calendar, and you need 4 weeks where you just let your body, all the ailments, all the little niggles you've got, they just go away. And mentally, you need a rest as well. But it just seems to be another excuse by Arsenal. Every other club is in the same position. And, you know, it's not something that's all of a sudden come up. This is where you need to invest in players and you need coming forward. You know, look at the forward options. Why have Liverpool got those forward options and Arsenal haven't?
Right, but you can also look at who are Liverpool centre halves. You know, it's not too much depth there. I mean, to be fair. But,
you know, Gab, at the end of the day, you've got to look at it. You've got to think, well, am I going to do the right thing, resting players and try and get them back? Well, they've got to have this 4 week break and we'll get them back maybe September the 1st. Because it's going to be so competitive this year. If you have two or three games where you're not on it and you might lose two and draw, you're going to be playing catch up all season. You know,
that's what I mean. These are two things that I don't get. I don't understand why teams don't put more of a premium on getting their transfer business done early, which in many cases they could do, you know, and rather than going and dropping points. I mean, I wrote a whole column about this, how United last year, remember with all the De Gea nonsense and they signing Martial late? So De Gea and Martial don't play in the first games. They end up, forget who it was against, but they end up drawing a game they could have won or losing a game they could have drawn or whatever because Romero, I think it was Swansea, because Romero's terrible, that 1 point would have made the difference between United being in the Champions League this year.
Exactly.
Which would have added up to an extra 20 or 30 million or maybe even more. Might have even kept Van Gaal in a job. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to scare you there. But is Wenger justified? Can you just say, well, look, if you don't like this, then, you know, hey, Premier League clubs don't go on round the world tours.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And it's the same argument that people use against the winter, introducing a winter break in England, that there's no way the clubs wouldn't use it to go and play friendlies in Qatar and what have you. I think it's strange that the Premier League decided to start. This is the same time the Premier League starts every year. It's always kind of the second or third, depending on how things fall, weekend in August. But obviously Italy and Spain always start a little bit later. France, I'm not sure when the French League starts, generally. But the Bundesliga is starting on the 27th of August. There is no reason why the Premier League wouldn't have said, we will start on August the 20th. The Bundesliga does have fewer teams, but the winter break surely acts as a counterbalance to that, as they take 3 weekends out.
And they still started later, the Bundesliga. The Bundesliga don't start for another 2 weeks.
Yeah, so you'd normally expect the Bundesliga to start.
Yeah, the thing is, Rory, where do you fit the extra games in the calendar? Because if you look at the calendar with the Europa League, Champions League, going all the way through till May, there's not a lot of space to fit these games in.
Well, that's not that would be the argument, but I'm not sure that's necessarily true. There's not a lot of space is quite correct, but there is space to fit them in. You could, for example, start next weekend and then play on the Wednesday. No games then.
I want to move on to Wenger and the central defender. I mean, this is something we talk about all the time, every year, central defender, the striker. Julian, I'll just assume that you know him better than the rest of us because you're French, and because I believe you're sleeping with a club employee at Arsenal.
I do.
There you go. But what gives? So he knows Mertesacker is out for a long time. So he's like, oh, but I have Koscielny, who's really good. Gabriel's improving. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I'll get this guy holding, who I have to say, because I don't follow the championship, I don't know who the hell he is. But I'm assuming he's not terrible. I mean,
he's promising.
What did they really think that this guy Holding and Chambers was just they would tie them over and then Koscielny's almost fit. Gabriel, he didn't know was going to get injured and
yeah, he didn't know about Mertesacker either. It's the uncertainty. I think he takes a long time to make his mind up about signing a player, what position signing him.
And didn't take a long time with Granit Xhaka, right?
It took a long time with Granit. It was done early, but it took a long time for them to sign Granit Xhaka. And I think it's the same for a centre half. I think they will sign a centre half. But it would have taken them a long time, and I think it would have been a good thing to have someone sorted for this weekend, obviously, someone like Mustafi, for example. But
when did we find out that Mertesacker was out?
Between 2 and 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, so before they went to America.
So at that point, that's what I thought. So at that point, it's the end of July. I mean, is it that unreasonable to say, look, I have two senior centre-backs who I think are really good. I've got this kid, Holding, who I signed in the championship, and I have Chambers, who, you know, nobody believes me, but I think he can fill in at centre back. I mean, surely that's enough cover until Mertesacker comes back.
I think people tend to forget a lot. He has a lot of faith in his own players. So Gabriel, for him, is a big player. No,
it's
really.
The Arshavin effect.
And it's often I've heard him say, he said to me, but if I've signed him, then that means that this one would never play.
You know the problem with that thinking? I've heard that thinking many times, and I have the impression that he believes this as far as his center backs are concerned, certain positions. But then I look at the number of attacking midfielders that he has, and he's got like 50. So what? Does that mean he doesn't believe in Oxlade-Chamberlain?
No.
Or Theo Walcott?
No. I think it's easier to buy offensive player than defensive player for Wenger anyway.
He just buys tons of those, and he's not really bothered about hurting their feelings. But when it comes to possibly upsetting Gabriel, then...
No, but he thinks Gabriel will come good.
If... Yeah, and in the meantime, he's getting older and older and older, and Arsenal keeping up winning.
I know. It's the flip side of...
Final thought on Jurgen Klopp. Scoey, what's a good result for Liverpool this season?
A good result getting in the top four. I don't see finishing sixth or even coming fifth as, oh, that's really good. A good result is finishing in the top four, and I think they're capable of it. They don't have the European competition that's going to clog up their fixture list. I think they're exciting. I think as a manager, unfortunately, I think they've got a good manager. You look at it yesterday. For me, if you swap the two managers over, you'd swap the results over yesterday. The passion that Klopp had in the second half, the way the players celebrated the goal, he celebrated the goal. I just think that's infectious.
Right, let's move on to City and Sunderland. And the big news, I think, actually happened before the game when Pep Guardiola decided to drop the brave England keeper, Joe Hart, for Willy Caballero. Roy, I'm assuming he did this, Guardiola said that it was because Caballero had a really good preseason. I'm guessing the safer explanation is that he dropped him because in Guardiola's system, you need a goalkeeper who's comfortable in the ball and can come way off his line and kick and pass and not just boot it or fall over. And that's not Hart's strength. Is that correct?
That is correct. This has been coming for a while.
Well, this being the case, Rory, this is why I'm a bit... I mean, obviously Pep can do whatever he likes and he's a genius, and if he does things that are unconventional, great. But what I don't understand, though, is he's been the City manager since February, even though he's another club, right? It's not like Joe Hart is some unknown guy. He's got plenty of people there who've watched Joe Hart up close. He must have an idea of what Joe Hart can and cannot do. Why make this decision now when it's going to be tougher to get a different keeper? It's going to be a lot tougher to sell him because teams are already settled. You may have to bench him. You're opening a gigantic can of worms. Why not quietly decide earlier and say, hey, Joe, how about you move on somewhere and I'll get somebody else?
Yeah,
can you explain this?
Your logic, as always, Gab, is impeccable. It's one of the things I'll miss most about you. I think it's a bit strange to leave it right until this point. It has been brewing. There's been whispers on kind of football's fishwife grapevine for quite a long time, a couple of months, that City maybe wouldn't be, or Guardiola wouldn't be averse to getting a new keeper. I think Joe Hart's known that. There's been kind of... What's the word? I don't want to get myself in trouble, but you know, other clubs have kind of had a sniff around Joe Hart because they were led to believe that there might be a possibility that he might be available this summer.
Why not try and go and deal with this situation earlier? Because obviously, a guy like Hart with his wages can only go to another big club.
Yeah,
he's probably not realistically going to go abroad because, despite what you guys keep telling yourselves, English goalkeepers tend not to be held in particularly high regard and they're expensive. If I look at the top six, they all have fairly outstanding goalkeepers, with the possible exception, don't be upset, Mignolet. Rather than waiting for Karius or whatever, why not be a little proactive, Cheeky, and why not see if you can work a deal there and move on? Isn't this, Julian, help me, isn't this the rational thing to do?
A case for a manager to come in and actually work with players before deciding if they're good enough or not. It's one thing that you can see that, okay, Bola is fit, it's not his favourite thing, it's not where he's best. By the way, Caballero is not much better on the ball either.
That's what I don't get.
Maybe Pep thought, okay, I'm still going to go in and work with him and see.
And
maybe
turn him into Manuel Neuer.
No, not turn him into Neuer, but maybe I can improve him a bit. Maybe he's going to get it. And maybe without being Neuer with the ball at his feet, he will get what I want him to do and everything. And maybe then Pep's like, okay, he's actually useless, let's try to move someone. And by the way, people seem to think it's easy to sign players. It's not easy to sign anyone, especially for a big club. And also, I think in the order of priorities, there were other positions before goalkeepers for Pep to sort out. And you saw how long it took them to sign John Stones. And I think signing Ter Stegen or Bravo or whoever else is also not going to be easy.
You know, I think it's surprising, though, that Jules, I agree with everything you said, as always, again, you're one of my heroes. But there was this issue with the goalkeepers. But the two positions that you look at City and you think you really need to strengthen there are left back and right back.
I was going to say that.
They did a very good job on Match of the Day of highlighting what Guardiola wants his fullbacks to do in terms of coming inside, reinforcing the midfield. Bakary Sagna and Giles Clichy aren't going to be doing that for you.
Bakary Sagna turns 34 years old on Valentine's Day. I really, really like him. And I've had the opportunity to meet him as well. Giles Clichy, whatever. Neither one of these people is Dani Alves, right? So
they both cross the ball for a start.
And on top of that, you don't even have the Kolarov alternative. Because through twisted reasons, you're making Kolarov, who, you know, is not particularly quick and is not, more importantly, a center back, even though he can pass the ball very, very well. You're playing him at center half. I'm assuming that'll change when Otamendi's fitter, or maybe not. Is anybody have any idea?
I did think, though, that they were worse at center halves last season than they were at fullbacks. I thought Sagna and Clichy had an okay season compared to the center halves. So maybe.
I mean, I like Sagna to play right back as a right back.
Mm.
But if we're going to ask Sagna to turn into some hybrid Mike on Dani Alves monster coming into the middle of the pitch and spreading the play, that's not what he does.
I know, but then if you look at it that way, it's the whole team almost. It's eight starters they need to buy.
Well, that's extraordinary.
I know, but so we can say again, you know, since February he could have thought a bit more about rebuilding the team, and that is, you know, it's taking a lot of time, but. I don't know, for the goalkeepers, I do believe, and for any other positions, I do believe that a coach has to wait to work with them before making his mind up if he wants to keep them or not.
Do you not think, going back to the Joe Hart situation, I don't know this, but I'd be very confident in saying it, he'd be a big personality in that City dressing room. And all of a sudden, he'll come into training and naturally, and he's got every right to do it, his chin will be on the floor and he won't be happy.
Homegrown players as well.
If all of a sudden they poach the world's best goalkeeper, David De Gea, and he comes across, I can understand that, but
you'd be upset.
I don't see it.
Well, I know, and you know, if you look at it, really, Lescott is gone, Barry is gone. A lot of English boys have gone who were there for a long time before, and I do think, and I can't believe they would keep Joe Hart just because, you know, he's respected in the dressing room.
Or
that
he wants to stay and be a backup. I mean, let's see. To be fair, maybe this is a one-off.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Maybe he looks at this and says, oh, look, Joe, I was, you know, psych. I just did this to give you a kick up the backside and you'll be back. I don't know. But it just seems to me that if you do make a change, and those links with Ter Stegen and Claudio Bravo, by the way, that all stems from the fact that, you know, those are two outstanding. I mean, I'm not a huge Ter Stegen guy, but those are two highly regarded goalkeepers at a big club. And I think both of them said, all right, enough of this. I want to play regularly. For those who don't know, Bravo mostly played in the league. Ter Stegen played in the Cups and the Champions League. So I think that's maybe what they were trying to do there. But you got to move sooner if you're going to do that.
No, you
can't leave it to the middle of August. I think it's one game into the season, but it's also true they needed a late goal to beat a Sunderland team where they had a couple new signings, Donald Love or whatever, but all these guys just rocked up in the past 48 hours. Any reason to be concerned?
Pep is teaching the City players a new language. And right now, they can't hardly do any words or at least any sentences. It will
English
take time
can't
to learn
new languages.
But you know what I mean? It's like it's a new thing, and they need to learn all the things, all the different aspects, all what he wants. And you could see on Saturday that some of them just struggled to understand at times exactly what he wanted and what he was shouting and what. So I think it will take time, but because they've got so much talent, some, you know, they will get goals like that. And but it's not going to be pretty, I think, until a certain time when they all get exactly what he wants.
The light will just come on, and it'll all be clear. One final thing: the guy who was described as being critical to this is İlkay Gündoğan, who I think must have just the greatest agent in the world, because I don't understand how somebody who's basically been injured for the best part of three seasons, all of a sudden we talk about him as if he's some sort of, you know, intersection between Xavi, Iniesta and Pogba. He's injured again. Was it a mistake to go and just chuck all this, or did they get him because, like, it's not that much money and we have Fernandinho, and if he's not fit? I mean, I'm just wondering, in terms of resource allocation, was this really worth doing?
It wasn't necessarily a crucial signing, Gundogan, was it? Like, you didn't look at them and think they desperately need him. But then the other big omission on Saturday was Yaya Toure, not even on the bench. So he's obviously decided he didn't like the look of the midfield. I think...
Yeah, but who's surprised by that one?
Well, Yaya, but apart from that, nobody. And his that guy, Salute, his agent, who I'm sure has had a really bad 3 days. But I think they looked at Gundogan and thought, if he gets fit, then he is a player who can do exactly what Pep wants.
David Moyes, I really like the guy in many ways, and I'm getting a bad look from Scully because he ruined Manchester United.
No, I'm just kidding.
But
be objective.
I was interested in the fact that he chose Sunderland, because this is a team that they're not going to spend much money, despite what Ellis Short says.
His other choices were?
I think he could have hung around, waited for somebody to screw up, and tried to work his way back in. He could have gone abroad again. I don't know. It is something where you are slightly putting your rep on the line at a club where I don't think there's going to be much investment. I think Ellis Short is simply interested in selling the club if he gets the right offer and doing just enough to keep them in the Premier League. So if he'd rather go and spend a big wad of cash in January.
I just think all these managers, it's a very dangerous game hanging around for the right club.
All right. Hey, Rory, are you as excited by David Moyes' return?
Am I excited by the appointment of David Moyes?
I excite very easily. No, I like David Moyes. I think he's good. He's good for football. But
I like David Moyes. David Moyes is a nice man with slightly frightening eyes. My worry about David Moyes is that I think United might have broken him as a human.
All right, this negativity.
Jack Rodwell, that ball for Jermaine Defoe. Hello.
He's like a new signing.
No, but it's like, you know, the guy could play. We forgot that for a long time. But that was a great pass. One of the best passes of the weekend.
I'm slightly bullish on Sunderland, actually, after all the negativity of the past years. On a very sobering note, the news just breaking as we tape this. Dalian Atkinson, the former Aston Villa, Real Sociedad, Manchester City, and another club's winger who had a bit of an up-and-down career. There's news that he has passed away after being tasered by police. I mean, the circumstances are unclear. Obviously, we're not going to speculate on that. But I wanted to bring up Atkinson because he was somebody who, for those who don't know, you can go on YouTube and check this out. I think he scored, it was either a goal of the season or close to goal of the season. It was an incredible goal he scored against Wimbledon in the early 90s.
It was the first season of the Premier League when Villa had...
It was Wimbledon, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Wimbledon Sellers Park. And it was the first season of the Premier League when Villa ran United close for the title, and I think he literally went through the whole team, didn't he? And then a lovely little chip over Hans Seger's just outside the box, if my memory serves right.
Yeah, it ended with quite a
famous celebration as a Villa fan that comes on the pitch with an umbrella because it's poured with rain. Am I right, Rory? You'll back me up with this.
I don't remember the celebration.
The video. The Premier League have apparently tweeted this video. It's on YouTube. You'll find it.
It was goal of the season.
What's interesting about him is this is a guy who was different, who, you know, an English player who was skillful. I'm not suggesting that that's different, but he was athletic and he was skillful. He had subtlety, he had creativity. He went abroad, and yet his career kind of fizzled.
Yeah, he came through the Ipswich youth ranks there. I think he came from, is he a Yorkshire lad, Rory? I think they got him. Ipswich had a fantastic youth setup in the late 80s, came through. I remember watching him as a kid on the terraces. He also scored, and I think it's on YouTube as well, a hat-trick against Middlesbrough. Just as he was a young lad, he was so raw, and he had everything. He scored a hat-trick against Middlesbrough, and it's one of the best hat-tricks you'll ever see. He could have been anything on his day, and I think if you interview. There'll be loads of quotes coming up in the next couple of days, and I'm sure the managers and coaches that have worked with him said he would have been, in today's market, he could have been worth millions, the ability he had, and it just never quite happened for him.
He was one of those players, Atkinson, that might have been born in the wrong era. I think,
yeah, I agree with
10
that.
Years later on, he would have had a more natural, well, English football had kind of changed a little bit to kind of accommodate him more easily. Whereas in the early 90s, when it was still fairly rudimentary,
he would have been perfect with the lone striker these days, yeah. With the 4-3-3, with the number 10 just behind him, he would have been perfect.
So it's obviously a sad day with Dale Atkinson's passing. Moving on to the New England managerial change, unsurprisingly, over the summer, Sam Allardyce is the new England boss. I just want to get your thoughts very quickly. I'll give you mine first. I have no problem with this. I think the England manager should be English. I think when you're a big nation, you should act like one. You shouldn't get foreign managers. Not there's anything wrong with them. They may be better, but in fact, it's an expression of your country. In the same way, I don't think you should go and try to naturalize Yanezai as the Dave Bernstein and the clever people at the FA pretending like they were going to do a few years ago. That would have worked out well, wouldn't it? Depending what you want from an England coach, I think it's fine, given the alternatives. I mean, I suppose Steve Bruce or...
Alan Pardew.
Eddie Howe.
It was a thin field. It was a really thin field. Allardyce makes sense, given that I agree with you about the English manager thing. It's cheating for a big nation to have a foreign manager. Yeah.
Klinsmann.
Is it cheating? How is it cheating? I don't get this cheating.
For a big nation, it's different for developing football nations.
Like a
rich first world major football power like England.
How's England a major football power at national level?
For example, Senegal or Papua New Guinea, England is a major footballing power. In the context of the world, England are a major power. They are a big nation. They with 60 million or 50 million people in England. Germany have German coaches. Italy have Italian coaches. Spain have Spanish coaches. Your national team is a representation of your football culture. If part of your football culture is wrong, then you do not get to import someone to make up for that. If you don't have a decent left back, you don't get to say, "Well, we'll take a Spanish left back." That's the point of it.
Right. So the flip side of that is, if somebody said to you, "You can have X as your manager and you'll get this far, or you could have him as his manager and he'll win you a national tournament, but he's foreign," what would you choose?
Well, the first one, because otherwise it makes the entire thing meaningless.
Exactly. It's kind of, if somebody came to you and said, "Scoey, you had a good career as a footballer. If you take these magic pills, which may or may not be performance-enhancing drugs, you can play for Man United and win 10 Ballon d'Ors." Which would you choose?
So why then, when Sven-Goran Eriksson came, and then when Fabio, all the media loving, this is what we need, this is
because
the
media
are
obsessed and they think it really matters to have an England team that wins.
To be fair, the media is not a homogenous thing. Like we all have different opinions. That's just my personal opinion. I'm sure. I mean, Henry may well think differently. I don't know. Ollie might think differently.
And I think now it's going to become, unless you can get a team like Sean Dyche out of the Championship into the Premier League, you're going to struggle to even be a Premier League manager now if you're English.
Let's move on. I was going to do a bit of a Premier League preview, but who cares? I'm going to ask you this. Yes, I'd like you to give me your top four in no particular order, because predictions at this stage are stupid. So just give me the top four. And give me your three relegated sides. I can see that Scully has his thinking cap on.
So I go Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea and Liverpool. And don't laugh, Hull, because I don't know how to say it. Burnley and... Watford.
Ooh, fighting words.
I'm going to go Tottenham, United, City, Liverpool, top four. No idea in what order. And I'm going to go relegation, Bournemouth, Watford. No, not Watford. Bournemouth, Burnley, and I'll go Watford.
Wow. No love for your mate, Mr. Pozzo, Rory.
No, well, I think it's more Mazzarri, isn't it? People aren't keen on Mazzarri.
And Palace need to...
Well, do you know, relegation is really interesting. There's a few teams you look at and think, don't fancy this season. I think top four, City, United, Tottenham, Chelsea.
No love for Arsenal and Liverpool from any of you guys.
I'd say Liverpool top four.
Yeah, those two are. And then relegation, Hull, unless they can sign some players and get a manager.
Yeah, I forgot about Hull.
Palace. Ooh. And I'm torn between Watford and Bournemouth and Burnley. But it's three of those five.
Yeah, I got three of those.
What's the game? 3 of 20. Yeah,
it's all right. Let me think. All right. Predictions
three
are stupid anyway.
Show.
Gab, come on, your turn quickly.
Yeah, I'm going to go with.
Can I write this down?
Yeah, exactly. His predictions are stupid. My top four is United, Chelsea, Spurs, and Liverpool.
Yeah, no City. That's
No, sorry. United, Chelsea, Spurs, and Arsenal. Sorry. Wow. They might change when the facts change. My opinion changes.
I agree. I think possession football.
I think Itaka's dead, man. For relegation. So I originally had Hull, Burnley, and Crystal Palace. Now I'm thinking, after seeing Bournemouth at the weekend, I'm wondering, man.
This time last year, I told you Bournemouth would stay up. You were like, oh, no, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say it again. They're going to stay up.
Yeah, but they have. Yeah, no. I think they're probably right. So let's go Hull, Burnley, and Palace. Okay, how about some quick hits? Hull City are on the verge of being sold. They have a reported 13 first-team players. The fans are angry. There's a caretaker manager. There's prospective new owners in the stands. And yet, they go and beat the defending Premier League champions, Leicester City. Rory, you're from that part of the world, sort of. Is it just a case of folks pulling together? And how did Hull City get into this mess?
I think there's an element of the inadvertency. People are galvanised. It was one of those shocks that you could see coming, if you see what I mean. It all relates to Hassan Alam and his continued ownership of the club. Very unpopular. He doesn't appear to want to still be there. The fans certainly don't want him to be there. There's this stasis behind the scenes with Alam not putting money in because they might be sold. Be very suspicious of the idea that there might be a takeover that saves them, because there were people at the ground on Saturday. Takeovers take months to complete. If they're going to buy the club in a couple of weeks, I would suggest they're not the owners you necessarily need.
A friend of mine who happens to be of Asian and specifically Taiwanese descent was at Hull City, in one of the boxes, at the weekend, and he was literally mobbed by the media, basically simply because the guy was Chinese and was wearing a suit and an expensive watch. What? Yeah, they assumed that he had something to do with the people.
We should
people
do that next time.
No, I'm serious. You could dress up as somebody from the Gulf as well and get plenty of attention.
The four of us could create a consortium, or whatever you say in English, and buy Hull City. Imagine the four of us owning Hull City. That would be amazing.
Not quite as crazy.
Who would be in charge of transfers?
I would be director of marketing.
I would bring Steve Bruce back and let... No, just kidding. Scully, your old club.
Yes.
One of your many old clubs. One of your three old clubs.
Five
old clubs. Leicester City were on the receiving end of that defeat that we just talked about. Nobody expects them to win the Premier League this season, I don't think. But are you surprised that they hung on to Vardy and Mahrez? And what's a realistic goal for them this year?
I am surprised. Not surprised that they... You know, they've lost Kante. I thought they might lose another. So far it's been so good, but the transfer window's not shut yet, so fingers crossed they won't lose Vardy or Mahrez. I think a realistic goal, if they can sort of maybe 7th or 8th, or get near the sort of where Liverpool finished last year, I think they'd have done exceptionally well. It's always going to be a difficult season after winning the league, but good luck to them.
Everton now have a billionaire owner, supposedly, and a manager whom everybody said that they loved in Ronald Koeman. They drew 1-1 with Spurs on opening day, and we even saw a back three from the new boss. Julian, it's not a bad result considering Stones is gone and Lukaku is nursing one of those injuries.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good result. I think it was a good performance. I think Koeman was the perfect choice for them to come in. And I think he's going to do a great job there, and I even think he's going to improve players like Ross Barkley, which would be very important for Everton.
Would they have been better off if they'd signed Ralph Kruger as well?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Speaking of Tottenham, it was something of an up and down performance. Roy, did it suggest to you that maybe Pochettino's young guns might be getting a little too comfortable? And while I have you, do you have any idea why that guy Paul Mitchell, who was supposedly Pochettino's transfer girl from his Southampton days and who they went through so much trouble to sign, just kind of resigned?
I don't have any particular insight into it. The suggestion is that it's because they handed full control of transfers to Pochettino, and therefore Paul Mitchell's kind of remit was reduced. But beyond that, I can't enlighten you further. But it's very odd, I do admit. Complacency, no. I think that a draw at Everton is a good result, and they played quite well in the second half.
Yeah, I might even suggest that Paul Mitchell was coming to the club well before Pochettino came, and this idea that Pochettino brought him in because it was his guy maybe wasn't quite that accurate. Manchester United roll over Bournemouth 3-1, and they do it without Paul Pogba, who weirdly was suspended.
With a game from Serie A, which happens a lot.
Man, I love it. Suspensions. I remember when that did not used to be the case, when you didn't have suspensions going. That's how old I am. From
it seems stupid.
Stupidest thing
I've seen.
Why? It would have been suspended if he'd play with Juventus.
He could be suspended when he moves back to Serie A. I mean,
what has Serie A got to do with Bournemouth away?
If you're suspended, you're suspended anyway. I think he's good.
Scully, what do you make of what kind of looked like at times a Rooney-Ibrahimovic partnership up front?
Pedestrian, is what I think.
And who do you reckon will partner Pogba in the middle of the park?
I think long term it'd be Carrick. I think it'll be a very...
How could anything be long term with Michael Carrick?
Well, over the course of a season.
Okay.
All right, this is where we're going with this one. Rooney Ibrahimovic.
You want Rooney dropped and Mkhitaryan?
No. I like Rooney Ibrahimovic. Look, it's too soon to start judging, and this is going to happen, and that's going to happen. I saw them at the Community Shield last week, and I thought Ibrahimovic was really pedestrian, very, very, very pedestrian, and I think that might hinder United.
I wonder if maybe we'd be better off figuring out how to get Pogba further up the pitch. Eh? Yeah. The way these pieces fit together is going to be absolutely fascinating.
Go everywhere.
But yeah, exactly. Well, it'll be really interesting to see how Mourinho sorts this out. Southampton share the spoils with Watford 1-1. Julian, your pal Claude Puel, who's a former league winner, by the way. I counted up the number of people who've actually won stuff among Premier League managers. It's a staggering amount. It's like 10 or 12 or something stupid like that. Anyway, he has taken over at the ultimate sell and reload club, where managers all seem to be interchangeable. How do you reckon he'll do?
I think he'll do very well. I think it was the right choice for them again, and I think it was the right club for him to move from France to the Premier League. And again, I think they had a plan a long time ago in case Ronald would go. And when he went, it was really easy. He was ready, and they had exactly the project they wanted, and he fits in that project perfectly.
Excellent. Gab, one for you. I hear Juventus new boy Higuain is injured, and you've been filling in for him, looking at the pictures. No, seriously, Gab, one for you. What's this I hear that there's changes to the Champions League, and are the big clubs from the big leagues really going to get even more privileges?
Didn't you read my column today, Scully?
No.
This is your first mistake. It's not official yet, but it will likely be rubber stamped when UEFA's executive meet at the end of August, because this is the compromise that's been hammered out with the clubs. But from the 2018-19 season, for at least 3 years, the top four leagues in the UEFA coefficient rankings, which right now are Spain, Germany, England, and Italy, will get four teams with guaranteed places in the group stages. So no more qualifying for them. This is basically a screw job to the rest of Europe.
Is this anything to do with the meeting that was held between clubs and UEFA a little bit? Got the fear factor there might be a breakaway?
But that's what's been driving it. Certain clubs, my understanding is Real Madrid and Juventus, but not just them. They asked for a lot of stuff. They wanted wild card entries for historical merit in case a big team, like say, I don't know, Manchester United, don't qualify for the Champions League, then they can get in because they've done well in the past. Or they wanted to talk about playing Champions League games on weekends where you can go and generate more TV revenue. And also they wanted to set up a different body where the clubs would be shareholders in the organization running the actual Champions League. Look, I'm on board with the idea that this is no longer a sport, but this is basically a giant television production. It's an arm of the entertainment industry. And UEFA cut the best deal that they could because there really was a real risk of clubs boycotting the Champions League. But all that said, I think it's a pretty sad, messed up direction that we're going in, and you're just seeing the gap between rich and poor, and you know we'll grow up into a future where kids just won't support their local team, and like kind of like you did, and no, just kidding. But we're going towards a future where it really will be all about big clubs, and I think the Super League is really around the corner. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many, many thanks to my guests today, Julian Lawrence, James Scowcroft, and Rory K. Smith. And it's a melancholy thing because obviously Rory's been a big part of this podcast since he came to the Times from that other newspaper. No, actually, he was at the Independent before, and then before that, I believe you were at the Telegraph. Before that, I have no idea where you were, Rory, but it doesn't really matter that much. You were in Bolivia, weren't you?
That was a long time.
There you
that,
go.
Yeah.
Yes, one of my favorite Boliviano files, Rory K. Smith, of course. So I think it's a big loss for the paper that you're moving on. But good luck at the New York Times. I wonder if maybe we can squeeze something. I can talk to Mr. Sulzberger, and maybe we can squeeze you back in on a freelance basis if you're amenable just for the podcast. But yeah, so thank you, Rory, for all your contributions and your patience over the years.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Remember, you can get exclusive football highlights free as part of your subscription. It's just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. So press that subscribe button on wherever you choose to download your podcast. We're going to be back next week.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.